If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic port aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailing man, the skipper brave and sure. 5 passengers set sail that day for a 3-hour tour, a 3-hour tour. Started getting rough, the tiny ship was tossed. If not for the courage of the fearless crew, the minnow would be lost, the minnow would be lost. The ship's aground on the shore of this uncharted desert isle with Gilligan.
It's Dave Player on 720 WGN. So Gilligan's Island, the iconic 1960s television series that only lasted 3 seasons and 98 episodes, has lasted 50 years and countless generations of fans. As a sweet, polite, and thoughtful character of Marianne from Kansas, Dawn Wells created an unforgettable and beloved character that still connects with people 5 decades later. And TV Guide ranked Dawn on the 50 sexiest stars of all times list, and she joins us tonight. Hello there, Dawn.
Hello, hello, hello. You know, it really is. I mean, good girl sounds like goody two-shoes. But, you know, when we were when we first got stranded on the island, the birth control pill wasn't even invented.
It wasn't.
So imagine if you drop Marianne today with Miley Cyrus on the piano top, topless or whatever's going on. Wow, what an adjustment.
You would have had to use a coconut. I don't know what you would have used. I mean, you were very they were very inventive, the writers back then.
Yes, they were. And we were pretty good that I could make a coconut cream pie with no cow.
That's right, right, right. That's true. That's
right.
True. Now, I grew up in the 70s, and I discovered the show in reruns here on WGN Television in Chicago. And the choice between Marianne and Ginger was always very easy for me because Ginger just seemed way, way, way too high maintenance, like just way too much trouble. It was always Marianne for me.
Well, don't you think maybe it's your age? I mean, don't you think maybe if you were 30 or something and wanted to go out rock and rolling or dancing or buying a cocktail, it would be a Ginger?
No.
I don't know. So
Mm-mm.
I was very impressed Mm-mm. because she was a movie star. And, you know, I'd seen Gods of the Laker that she did with Rock Hudson, and I was, wow, we have this beautiful movie star on the island. And yet, the question always is Marianne or Ginger, and I don't mean to be egotistical, but I usually always win. But
you
I would
do.
Have been your best friend, too, you know.
Yep.
I would cook, I would clean, I'd go to the Boy Scout meeting with you, we'd go to the prom. I mean, I think there was a, she'd be your friend.
Absolutely.
Let's put it that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought of as even as a 14-year-old kid, that that was the route to go, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The last time I saw you was a couple years ago when you were here in Chicago, and I got to tell you, you look fabulous.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It gets harder every year, but I'm very lucky. I'm very healthy. I'm very happy. I'm very optimistic. And, you know, worries and troubles and everything make a difference in how you age. And I don't seem to have any at this point, knock wood.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, before we dive deep into the book, you know, a little background on you. You first grew up in Reno, Nevada.
In Reno, Nevada, where there was gambling and divorce and prostitution was legal. And a Marianne came out of that. But my mother raised a Marianne. I had rules. We didn't have the internet where people hide in their rooms and say things that you as a parent don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother kept an eye on me. My parents were divorced when I was 4. Mother and father were good friends. I lived in Reno. My dad lived in Las Vegas. My stepmother and mother were both concerned if I got a cold. That's very rare today. And when I look at that and think, you know, that's what helps. The family is a family.
Absolutely.
You might have had a grandmother that raised you that made a difference, you know? So
right.
I really feel very fortunate.
I agree with you, and it is all about the family. How did you find your way now from Reno to Stevens College in Missouri? Because you kind of made your way through Missouri and then Seattle. What attracted you to Stevens College?
Well, I was an only child. My parents, my father didn't adopt children until I was 16. So I was an only child, and no brothers and sisters. And I just wanted to go to a girls' school. And my father said, no, not in high school because you need to know what boys are. You know, how they respond. And only child, you know, if you've got a brother and sister and you fight over a toy, your brother and sister is going to be there tomorrow. If you fight over a toy and it's next door neighbor, they may never come back. So I was very conscious of wanting to live dormitory style with a bunch of people. And I was accepted to Stanford. In my generation, that was tough. And Mills College, which was both of them very close to Reno. And one of the admissions counselors came from Missouri to Reno High, and I went, whoa, now here's a girls' school halfway across the country.
Yeah.
I'm going, and I want to tell you how old-fashioned it was. We caught the train in San Francisco, and the train went from San Francisco to Los Angeles all through Arizona, all the way to Missouri, picking up Stevens girls all the way.
Wow.
So by the time we got there, 4 days later, you had 100 friends.
That's
it was
cool.
A wonderful experience.
I bet.
And also, it was concentrated on what you could be without competing with the boys.
Sure, sure. But then you went on to University of Washington in Seattle, where you got your degree in theater, and you were crowned Miss Nevada in 1959. I mean, that's pretty cool in and of itself.
Well, I say it's no big deal. There are probably only 10 women in the state.
Okay.
California, probably 150 girls competed for. But no, I they asked me to run. I thought, this is so silly. I'm short and I'm little, and you've got all these beautiful, tall, long-legged women. But I thought, being a theater major, see if I could get up in front of all these people and do a scene and not be nervous about it. And that's really the reason I entered.
Now, at what point in your life did you say, you know, I want to be on stage, I want to be in theater? Was it in college, or was it even before that?
Well, and I like medicine a lot. If I were doing it all over, I might go into genetics. So Washington had a great med school. And when I graduated with a degree in theater, I said, I'll give myself 1 year. And I analyzed it. I ran a camp in Idaho talking about how do you pick where you're going to go. And most of New York was musical comedy, and I don't sing. I thought, okay, let's go to Los Angeles, and I'll give myself a year. And if I don't go to work, I'll come back to med school. And I went to work right away, but the first thing I did was a play with Mercedes in Cambridge. And I was doing the play right in Hollywood, and agents came to see me. And Warner Brothers put me under option to contract, which means they didn't pick up the contract, but I did 9 shows in a row, so I had that film experience. And from that point on, I just worked solid.
I know, that's pretty cool. I mean, at a very, very young age, I mean, right really out of college, you were doing episodes of 77 Sunset Strip, the Maverick, Bonanza. That's pretty cool. How did Gilligan's Island come along?
Well, I don't know how long after I came to Hollywood it came along, because I was doing a lot of work. But there was a call out for, there were 3 replacements. It were 3 school teachers, I think, and CBS said, fine, but let's rewrite. So they created a Ginger, a Professor, and a Marianne. And I was just one of the 4,000 girls that went up for Marianne. And we tested at CBS Television City, and we tested with both Gingers and Marianne all day long for about 5 days. Every ingenue, every sex symbol were all there, and they tried to match with even the professor. Russell used to tell me, the vice president used to say to him, Russell, take off your shirt. No, I'm not going to take off my shirt. So I think they were looking for muscle men, too. I don't know what they were looking for.
Yeah.
But it went on for a week, and I got the part. You know, I don't know. I was lucky, but I also have a perfect type, and I say that to students. I was very well trained. I knew my craft, but I also looked like a Marianne.
Yeah.
You know, Ginger, no matter how good she be, could be as an actress, you would never cast her as a Marianne.
Right. Right.
So that physical stuff does make a difference, I think.
Sure. Now, at first season, you were just credited at the beginning as the rest. And
yes, I'm still the rest. No. Yeah, and the professor and I used to send each other cards, love the rest. But after the first year, and I don't know who takes the credit. Gilligan took the Bob took the credit. One of the directors took the credit, and Sherwood said, this is silly, there's 7 people on an island. So they rewrote the credits. But I wasn't uptight about that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I don't have that kind of an ego. You do your job and you do the best you can, and you can't manipulate the business. You don't know what's going to happen.
But what's funny is, because we all grew up with 3 channels back then, is that we, you know,
yes,
the large amount of audience that saw that show compared to today. I mean, you know, it's so, you know, diverse on all the entertainment that you can have. But back then, and even in the 70s and in the early 80s through the reruns, I mean, you know, the communal experience of watching some of these shows and growing up with them, you recognize stuff like that because you saw these episodes 500 times.
That's right. And the whole family watched it together.
Yeah.
And I look at it and I still laugh because we really had a talented cast.
Yeah, yeah.
And it blended perfectly. I mean, the casting was perfect and each character was so specific. You know, a lot of the shows, we had the Partridge Family and the Monkees and Father Knows Best and all of that, but it was so unique that we were on this island with all these clothes and coconut cream pies.
Yeah, it was a different type of story than the usual family, you know, sitcom. And tell me about your relationship with some of the folks on the cast. Tell me about Bob Denver.
He was an incredible guy, very, very, very smart.
Yeah, you're close to him.
Yeah, and he was very, very selective. Very few people were invited to his home. He was very, very private. And Bob and I just really connected. he was a genius at what he did. And I'm going to ask you this question because I'm sure you don't know the answer. I think sometimes when you're a genius in whatever category you are, you're not necessarily gregarious or trivial conversation is a bore, blah, blah, blah. Well, do you know who Charlie Chaplin's best friend was?
Uh-uh.
Albert Einstein.
Really?
And that all, yeah, and I was doing some research for doing a historical thing I was doing, and I went, wow, but think of the two brains together.
Right.
I mean, they're both geniuses in whatever they do, but yet they found each other, and I really think that Bob, he did Maynard, G. Krebs, that, but not only, there wasn't a lot of wit in what Bob did in Gilligan's Island, it was physical.
Yeah.
Falling out of trees and tripping and all of that. And I look at his little body now when I watch it and think, oh, my gosh, he was so limber about everything he did. And yet he was into no pesticides. I'd say, Bobby, you look so tired today. What happened? He said, well, I had to name a spider farm last night. We had a spider farm and we had to name all the spiders. So he was very in tune with kids. And I think that's what the soul of Gilligan came through.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it was such a fun, whimsical character that everybody kind of embraced and grew up with. What about Alan Hale?
Oh, he was a doll. And he was the same size as my father.
Is that right?
Every time he'd hug me, he'd kind of pick you up off the floor. You know, he was a great big jovial. Never saw him angry. Never saw him temperamental. The professor and I were very close because we were and the rest. We send each other cards, love the rest all the time. But he had a great sense of humor. Actually, you think of Jim Backus, but in between takes, Russell was the funniest. The professor was the funniest.
What about Jim and Natalie? The Howells.
Oh, they were hysterical. I mean, Natalie and I were very close, and she was very much her character. Very much her character. Jim, for a comedian who don't usually share your humor, he'll say, Natalie, try it this way, you'll get a bigger laugh. Or sure, put a word with a K in it, it gets a bigger laugh. And at one point, Natalie said, every time we come off of the scene, Jim is just doing all this ad-libbing, and I don't know what to do. So Jim taught her how to ad-lib. And if you see the later episodes, they're both trying to outdo each other, coming out of the hut trying to ad-lib.
That's awesome. That's
but he
awesome.
Was very cheap. He had a lot of money. But he would ask Natalie and I know you read the book, but he would ask Natalie
yes.
and I to go to lunch. Then we go to lunch, and at the end of it, he'd say, oh, I forgot my credit card. I don't have my wallet. And at the end of the first season, Natalie presented him with
a bill.
With
a bill, yes.
You're yes. on lunch, Jim. And I don't think he ever paid her either.
Right. How about Tina Louise?
Well, Tina, you know, I was in awe because she was a beautiful, beautiful woman. And she knew what camera angle she wanted, and she ordered us the false eyelashes from New York, and she was glamorous all the time. And I don't say I envied that, but I was in awe of it. She was a little reserved, I guess. I think she really thought that it might have been more of a show about Ginger.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw a temper tantrum. I never saw any conflict with anything, but she was a little removed.
Yeah. Yeah, and she didn't, you know, I know later years didn't participate in the reunion specials and all that good stuff as
no.
well. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, she wanted
no.
to kind of leave that behind us. And that's what I love about you is you know, although you've done so much theater over the years and so many other things in your life, and I know you're working on a cookbook and doing so many other things, you've embraced this character. And I love that, you know, there are some icons of vintage television that we all grew up with that really still embrace that character and appreciate what that time of their life was like.
Well, yes, and I had a wonderful time. I learned a lot. I made some money. We were one of the top 10 shows for quite a while. What do you want?
Yeah, right.
If you go into acting, what do you want? Nobody know who you are. I wonder what they're doing now.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I felt lucky, and that's why I went back to stage to show I can do more than Marianne.
Sure. Now, I found some trivia points. Dawn, the show was filmed at CBS Studios, the same studio that was later home, the stage of the Mary Tyler Moore Show and Roseanne, and those lagoon scenes were in a parking lot, simply filled with water.
We tried to film at Malibu, and there was so much fog. So because we were such a hit, CBS dug a lagoon
really?
That little boats could come in out of, and they would take palm trees with moss covering the pots and orchids and things. For Monday and Tuesday, we'd be shooting outdoors. Wednesday and Thursday, Gunsmoke would come in, and they'd take the palm trees out and bring in tumbleweeds.
Wow.
And just about a year or two ago, they cemented it all over.
I know. I heard that. That's kind of a bummer. But that was a long time, like 47 years sitting on the lot, which is pretty cool. You know, the series itself was so whimsical. It was quaint. It was fun. And it was kind of a nice escape from daily life.
Well, and Bob it was such physical comedy, and Alan kind of doing the Oliver Hardy thing. But also, I think that The cast was terrific. You didn't have to stop and think about anything. You laughed, and it was over. And we are the longest running show in the history of television syndication. Never been off the air since 1964. And one of the reasons is there's no clothes or cars to tell you when it was filmed.
That's true. It's
1956 with a Chevy in the driveway. I mean, it's very, very different. And everybody has a fantasy of wanting to be maroon, hence the Survivor and all that stuff that's happened since. Sherwood was very smart. I can't go anywhere in the world.
No,
in the world without being a Marianne, it's amazing to me.
Well, it's very timeless. You're absolutely right. When you do something like that, it's very timeless. Now, you know, it held on to the ratings for all three seasons. You must have some favorite episodes yourself.
Oh, we love the dream sequences because we got to be other things, you know. And I remember, we got the little Eliza Doolittle character with a Cockney accent, and I played an old witch, and that was always fun because you got away from your character. And then we had some very interesting guest stars, Don Rickles and Rory Calhoun, where Ginger and I just followed around this handsome man, whatever he was doing. He was so gorgeous. We didn't get that very often. But no, it was a great experience. You know, people say, well, it's just such a silly show. Well, it takes a lot to make a silly show.
Well, and they make a big deal these days when a series ends about the final episode and some closure. There was no closure. How did you find out the series was even canceled? It was intended to be renewed, wasn't it?
We were picked up for the fourth season. Scripts were purchased. We went on vacation, I don't know, March, something like that. And Sherwood called us in May and said they've canceled us. And the rumor is, we were in the top 10. Why you would cancel somebody in the top 10 today, I don't know. But they had a half hour to fill. And Dennis Weaver had a pilot that didn't sell, and they were looking for another half hour show. And they decided to cancel Gunsmoke. And the head of CBS's wife was on vacation. Mm. And when she came back, she said, "You don't cancel Gunsmoke. I want it." So they canceled us.
Oh, wow.
Now, that's the rumor. I don't want to be sick, but that's the rumor that why we got Sherwood said, "I'm sorry, it's over." And that was a shock to everybody.
I bet. But then here's what I loved is there came the reunion movies and the rescue from Gilligan's Island. And it was one of the highest rated made-for-TV movies at that time. How fun was it getting back together? Was it almost surreal? Like, oh, my God, we're going to do this all over again?
Yes, and some of the plots were stupid. Harlem Globetrotters, and I mean, some of that stuff. And they come in and play basketball and leave and don't know where they were. You know, I mean, that's about as close to reality as you can get, you know. But no, it was fun, and we're so happy to see each other. And when we came back, I don't know if you remember the episode, but the whole hut floated in to Santa Monica Pier.
Yeah, you tied all the huts together.
Tied them all together.
But see, after watching it for all those years and watching all the reruns, even a decade later, you know, it was cool to have some closure. You wanted to know how they were finally going to get off that island.
Yeah, and it would really kind of been that kind of neat to have us all go back to where we came from and see if you would adjust. But, of course, that's too esoteric to even think about.
Yeah. Well, you know, here are some trivia points that I want to check with you that were just featured in Parade magazine in the Chicago Tribune. Number one was the Coast Guard would often receive telegrams from people who didn't realize the show wasn't real.
Well, we had the Coast Guard, not often, but the Coast Guard, Sherwood, our producer, stopped filming one day and he said, "The Coast Guard here and they want to talk to you." Five or six of the muckies came in and said, "We have to tell you a true story. We keep getting calls and telegrams and letters saying there are seven people marooned in the Pacific Ocean. Why can't you find them?"
That's awesome.
Talk about believing what you see.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Number two. Now, this one you're going to have to tell me. Number two, Dawn Wells, Marianne, was the only cast member to receive compensation from the show's syndication.
I do not know where that came from. Yeah. And the Huffington Post questioned me and said, "You got $1 million?" I said, "Where?" your husband negotiated. I said, "With whom?" Not a dime. Not one of us made a dime on the reruns.
That's amazing.
I understood that Sherwood Schwartz made over $90 million on the reruns.
Wow.
We didn't make a nickel. So, no, unfortunately, I don't know why. Everybody, where that came from, I don't know.
All right. Number three was Raquel Welch auditioned also for the role of Marianne.
Well, I was told that, but when we were at the big soundstage at CBS, and there were hundreds of people auditioning, probably 200 or 300, and I was told that on Thursday that Raquel came in to audition for Marianne. I never did see her, but she would have been a better Ginger than Marianne, so I don't know whether that's true or not. If I ever meet her, I'm going to ask that question, because I've heard that several times.
Yeah.
I didn't see her, so I don't know.
Number four, Gilligan's first name, though never mentioned on the show, was Willie?
There's a controversy about that. I don't think there ever really was one first name, and I think as time went on, they kind of tried to make that up, and I don't know. I never really asked Sherwood, but we never heard that first name.
Another wise tale. Number five, the original pilot had a Calypso theme song, different with lyrics by composer John Williams, who later went on to pen the score for Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and Star Wars and so forth. I've seen that on YouTube. It was a completely, because Sherwood Schwartz was into, you know, he did the Brady Bunch and all these other shows where he told the story and the theme, which is such a tragedy that themes are such a small part of today's sitcoms and today's shows. But there was a much different theme in the beginning, in the pilot.
Well, and the pilot there wasn't, and I remember when he tried, when CBS didn't want it. They said, this is the stupidest show we ever saw. And I think the head of CBS said, how are we going to know they're marooned every week? Sherwood said, well, we'll write a song. He said, what do you mean, we'll write a song? Well, come back to us and write a song. And Sherwood tells the story. He said, I don't sing. So he said, I sat down at the piano and tried to kind of create something. He came in with all the suits, with all the executives sitting there, and they said, okay, now tell us what it's going to be. And he's trying to sing the song without a piano, and he's going, bow, you know, when the storm comes up and everything. And he said, I finished the song, and they all looked at me and said, thank you very much. And he got up and walked out of the room. So he created the story and created telling the story just before every episode.
Well, hope to see you in town soon. That was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for staying up with us tonight.
Thank you for being such a great interviewer. Have a great day.
All right, you too. We've got much more planned ahead on the show tonight, all coming up next on 720 WGN.